Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find that at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. That means our 60th anniversary is coming up next week. Next week, the 60th Pacific Northwest Writers Conference will be held. SeaTac Hilton here in Seattle-ish, Washington. That's from the 16th to the 19th. I will be there. Boys and girls, I'll be there teaching a class on Thursday about following your dream with Ingrid Ricks, and I'll be doing a class on Sunday about confidence. Very important for a writer, confidence. You can forget about craft. You can't forget craft, but you can forget your confidence. Happens all the time. And I will also be giving free one-on-one coaching for attendees. If you find me, I will be setting up a little stand there and doing free coaching anyone who needs it. So look me up. If you want to find out about the conference, go to pnwa.org and sign up if you haven't yet. It's a good one. All right. So if you've ever, I don't know if I've ever mentioned it specifically on this show, but I know I talk about it all the time in my classes and workshops. And I've written about it in both the blogs that I write on for the magazine and on No One Is Broken. But life, in my opinion, in my experience, life is a story we are telling ourselves. It is a story we're telling ourselves. In fact, I would go so far as to say the only way human beings can perceive the world and can communicate about their life experience is through the metaphor of story, whether they call it that or not. It's really the idea that life is a story we're telling ourselves, and rewriting is foundational to the work I do. I know that as I've changed the story of my life has gotten better. So you can imagine how excited I was when today's guest, Kim Schneiderman, when her book arrived at my doorstep. Her book is Step Out of Your Story, Writing Exercises to Reframe and Transform Your Life. I saw that and I said to myself, I've got to get her on the show, and I did. Kim Schneiderman is a psychotherapist, workshop facilitator, former journalist, and spiritual essayist. She counsels adults through her private psychotherapy practice and has facilitated therapeutic writing groups all over New York City. Again, the book is Step Out of Your Story, Writing Exercises to Reframe and Transform Your Life. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, Kim, it's good to have you here. I meant everything I said there in the intro. I really do feel like my life and our life is a story we're telling ourselves. And actually, interestingly enough, you have treated it that way since you were a little girl. Isn't that so?
Mm-hmm. When I was little, I used to imagine that I was a character in the story. And I even had like a little name for myself. I was Kim S. in person. I mean, I can't tell you why I had that name for my alter ego, but but I was a kid.
That is awesome. That is so awesome. That is the perfect that character that you created, Kim S. in person, would be like the headstrong, adorable first person in a children's early reader book.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I was always reading, so I was always, you know, I always had my head buried in a book.
Well, but so you went on to journalism. This was your first career, is that right?
Yes.
And how did you like that?
Well, what I loved about journalism is I loved the challenge of telling a story. I mean, I knew that I wanted to be a writer, and yes, actually at one point I thought I wanted to go into advertising to do copywriting, and then I was an English major in college, and I had a professor that said, like, some of the greatest poets of our time had sold their souls and become copywriters. And I said, oh, okay, I can't do that. So I thought, okay, I was trying to get a job in journalism a job in copywriting, but I had been writing for my school paper and ended up there. And I learned a lot of, I think, really good tools and techniques for telling a story. But ultimately, the thing that always drew me more was character development. And at that time in my life, I was living in San Francisco, and where I was exposed to a number of very interesting characters, as the opportunity to work on my character, the character that I was, had grown up since childhood in so many interesting ways. So character development, so I was working on myself. I actually entered therapy at that time and started, but it was always, again, like this whole idea of working on myself as a character, working on my character, and being just drawn to people's stories of transformation. And ultimately, that kind of led me to become a therapist, where I help people transform their character. So there, I feel like there was some consistency there.
Talk to me about that moment when you shift. That's a big shift in careers from journalism to psychotherapy. It's an interesting thing about journalism is there's something about the journalist's eye that almost has to, I don't know how to say this, but almost can't be suspicious of self-help, but can't indulge in it. There has to be such a kind of cool detachment from it all, whereas the psychotherapist has to get into it. To get underneath it all. Does that make sense? It seems like a big switch.
Yeah, first of all, what they both have in common is the whole idea of communication and helping people tell their stories. Whether I'm interviewing people and asking them questions as a journalist to try and elicit the story, there's a different intention. That's to share the story with others. But as a therapist, I'm helping them I'm trying to elicit their story because we all have a story waiting to be told.
Yeah.
And my job is to help them become, is to be somewhat, I don't know if I want to say an editor, but really to help my clients, for example, look at how they read the text of their lives. Because that's how I see it, that like if our life is an unfolding story, this unpredictable, dynamic, unique, unfolding story that's open to interpretation, especially our own, then it's incumbent upon us to use that power of interpretation to be able to mine our story for meaning, for positive meaning.
So it's
sort of like it's they're similar. It wasn't exactly, my career path definitely did not follow a straight line, and there were many twists and turns, just like in many good stories. And I went from, for various reasons that had to do with my family, I went from being a writer to a therapist to back to being a writer and then back to being a therapist. And so this book is kind of a marriage of the two. Passions.
Well, it seems to me that as a therapist, I'm not actually a therapist, but I'm kind of like a life coach for writers. So it's a form of therapy I do. And one of the things I find myself having to do is to convince my clients that what they're calling reality is just a story, that they've been living what they think is a reality, the same as the sun is in the sky and then it goes down, and if you drop a penny, it falls, that's reality. But they're actually living a story that they're believing and suffering with or not. Do you find yourself having to go through that also?
Absolutely. And absolutely, we all have a story that we tell about our story is our interpretation, though. Something happens to us, right? Like, say we lose our jobs or we get divorced and we have a story about it. Well, I screwed up the boss didn't like me. So that's one way of telling the story, because we're always like shifting. We're always sifting through competing narratives. So there's many ways to tell the same story. But what my book offers is a way to read your story as a personal growth adventure.
Yeah.
so, and that's not just looking at the way that you're, like, it is about the way that you, so, yes, you can help people sort of rewrite their stories, like, well, is there another interpretation when you say that you lost your job because your boss didn't like you? Is there another interpretation? So that's definitely part of the psychotherapist's job, and also part of, I imagine, the life coach, you know, a coach's job is to help them turn the story around. But the way I do it in my book is particularly to help them identify the character development opportunities in their stories, because every story has conflict. And I don't mean conflict with a capital C. It's not like there's a war. I mean, hopefully, you know, sometimes it's just the tension between what you want and what you hope to do, and the forces that meet and refine, the forces that bump up against that refine your edges. So, can you appreciate conflict in your story? I talk about, like, the antagonist of our story being a character, could be benevolent or a bad character. Who pushes us to stretch and grow in a particular way. Because every character in a story is challenged. They face a conflict where they start out with a particular point of view where they think the world is one way, and then something happens. they are pushed to grow and or develop in response to whatever challenge they face. And we kind of... You know, as readers or people who go to the movies, we expect that to happen, and we root for the main character. We want to see them change. We want to see them grow, you know. But we don't always step out of our stories to look at our lives the same way.
I was thinking, you know, if you write fiction, I used to write fiction. I don't anymore. I write memoir and such now, and spiritual essays. But if you write fiction, you're going to put your characters through the ringer. I mean, you're going to deprive them. You're going to kill their loved ones. You're going to maim them. You're going to make them go poor. And that is what makes the story. And you love those characters, but you know you need those things, and you would never wish these things on yourself or your children. And yet, without those things, the story doesn't exist.
Right.
But we always think, but our life needs to be free of all of this.
Right. But whose life is? I mean, not that, you know, our lives are just by being human beings, we're going to face challenges one way or the other. And it's how we choose to grow from those challenges, you know. It's really, and I agree with you. I mean, one of the first exercises that I have people do is to do a character sketch of themselves.
Yeah.
And then they look at who is this. I have people write in the third person, which taps into the omniscient narrator, and that's
And by the way, I love that. I love that. I'm going to just interrupt you slightly. I apologize, but listeners, she has her students, her clients, her workshop attendees, or anyone who buys this book, tell their story in the third person, which I think is a great way of turning yourself into a character. So kudos for you on that.
Thank you. And actually, it's based on research. There's a growing body of psychological research. In fact, there was a big article. There was a big article the cover story of the June issue of Psychology Today was about how we talk to ourselves, saying that the more constructive voice is the third person. And basically, the research says that when we talk about ourselves in the third person, we tend to view ourselves more compassionately as characters who've overcome obstacles instead of victims. So it's actually using... Well, it makes sense. Like, we can kind of look back and say, oh, yeah, when I was in high school, I was this, like, nerdy kid, but then I did this, and I did this, and I got over that. Whereas sometimes when we're talking... And when we're talking about ourselves in the first person, like... when we talk about ourselves as an I, that's when the ego likes to get involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you say I think this or I think that, we become very attached to the descriptors that follow. But what writing in the third person does, and I like to call it the sneaky perspective, because what it does, it's very sneaky. It fools your censoring ego into thinking that you're writing about somebody else. You know, when you're actually writing about yourself. So I don't know how I got on this, but I use the third person narrative. Now I'm like lost my train of thought. But
we were
talking
about character development. You were talking about character development.
Oh.
And conflict.
Oh, right. Thank you. See, you're a good listener.
Yeah.
When you're doing like a character, I have people do like a character sketch of themselves in the third person. And I ask like, who is the protagonist? What does he or she want? What's getting in the way and what's at stake? So you start out there. But then in the next chapter, I say, well, now let's let go of that for a minute, because oftentimes authors think that their character is going to develop in a particular way, but they realize at some point they have to let go, and the character takes over and gets and develops the way that they're meant, that they need to develop.
Right.
So that's part of life, I think. I mean, I can tell you from personal experience, as the character of my story, that she never imagined that she'd be where she is today. I'm talking about myself in the third person. But really, I mean, I had to really let go of a lot of, I mean, I lost with my parents. I'm a middle-aged orphan living in Manhattan, which is where I said I would never live, but actually very happy here. And I've had to let go of all these things that I thought that I needed, and it's actually been really liberating in many ways. And I've grown tremendously just by virtue of my ability to let go. And so there's something about being able to, you know, and I look back and, like, I can see how the different challenges that I faced, and I wouldn't have, you know, I would have never asked for the challenges that I faced. And I mean, there's much more difficult challenges than I faced, other people have faced, but I wouldn't have asked for them. But since they've happened to me, I can certainly see that each one has helped me grow into the person that I am today. And the person, you know, and that feels really good to me.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. That is so universal, Kim, because the best, when people tell the stories and they sit down and tell you their stories, unless they're mired in a really sticky web of I'm a victim to all this stuff that's happened to me and I never did anything wrong and it was never my doing, that usually the story's not so good. But if they have some perspective on it, the most challenging experience, the divorce, the cancer they got through, the child who was ill, the broken this, that, whatever it is, that becomes the defining story for them that they came out of. And they all hate it at the time, but it always becomes the pivotal story in their life. And I teach memoir, and it's always about that. It's about the thing that they never would have wanted that became the defining experience for them, about how they understood life.
The reason that is because these experiences deepen us as a character. They deepen, I believe that they really enrich and deepen our humanity. If we choose to read the story of our lives in that particular way. Because you can read it a different way. You could get stuck. I mean, many people do get stuck in the victim story.
Yeah.
And, so it depends on how you choose. And what my book tries to do is it tries to provide in particular architecture that keeps people on track so that they can look at, for example, what I like to talk about the antagonist of their story being like a personal trainer that helps them develop their underutilized, flabby, you know, emotional or mental muscles. So if you can look at like things that are challenging you to develop as opportunities to develop the muscles where you're maybe not as strong, but also to look at where you want to grow. How do I cultivate more courage in my life? How do I marshal all the strengths and resources at my disposal to face a challenge? So I apply all the story elements, like what I call the story lens on life.
Yeah.
I help people apply the story elements of the story, which many to their own lives, to help them see themselves that way so that they can kind of root for themselves and also be much more curious about the unfolding of their story and have that bring that same sort of sense of adventure that they would bring to reading a novel to their own story, because that keeps us open. Like, where is
this
leading? Let's be curious.
Instead of just dreading what's coming down the pike, like, oh, Jesus, I hope tomorrow doesn't suck, or I hope the day after that doesn't suck, but an actual curiosity about where it's going, because doesn't it seem to be? And, you know, in fact, I look back at my life recently and how I got to where I am, and it's been a very zigzaggy course, but I see how, despite all my attempts to frustrate it, life was bringing me in the correct direction. I mean, I had my ideas about what was supposed to happen, and then meanwhile, my life was taking me in this other direction that I fought, and then finally kind of surrendered to. But it was always mm-hmm. heading in this one place. I couldn't see mm-hmm. it, but it was going there, you know.
Right,
and that,
right.
And that's all. Character, you know, it's interesting. You do a great thing. I love the idea of the and I actually think it's really important in the stories of your life, and I go through this all the time when I'm teaching memoir, which is different than what you do, but there's a lot of crossover. As I was reading through your book, I see there's a lot of crossover. And that's the question, again, of what we call antagonists. And you mentioned how you treat them as you ask your clients to look upon them as personal trainers. And it seems to me, and I'd be curious to hear what you think of that there's two ways to know that you're smart, say. For instance, there's of the many things we might have questions about. One way is to have someone you really respect say, Kim, you are such a smart person. I just really value your intelligence. And that's nice. But the other way is to have someone say, Kim, you haven't got one smart idea in your head. Do you know that? Because now, don't you have to decide, do I believe that or not? And if and there's nothing like someone telling you you're stupid for you to check in with, what do I believe I am?
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah, in fact, one of the things I have, I provide a step-by-step guide to help people walk through their story. And
yeah.
So after the, you know, if you remember the story arc, so if people start at the exposition where they do the character
right.
sketch and then they move up to the conflict and then at the climax piece of this, what I do is, rewind for a minute, but I have people isolate the current chapter of their life and describe
yeah.
it and give a title to it, because that's the moment where the protagonist of your story, who is you, is being asked to grow. And I have them describe it. And then I have them say, okay, so what's the challenge? Where are you being pushed to stretch in beyond your perceived limitations? So it could be a good thing. It could be like getting married or planning a wedding or writing a book. Or it could also be, you know, something more challenging and difficult, like a divorce or getting unemployed. So the climax section of the book was always, and my book started out as workshops, it was always the hardest thing for me to figure out, because I figured, well, you can always, in the classic climaxes of, you know, classic stories, the hero destroys the villain, you know, in that
yeah.
final showdown confrontation. Mm-hmm. But how does that mirror life, and how can you predict these things? And I realized that, first of all, sometimes just being willing to show up and face you're the antagonist of your story is like half the battle. And
mm-hmm.
there is a way to, and really, what I realized is there was a way to walk away from whatever confrontation with your antagonist you were facing and still feel empowered. And that was to do what you just described, was to be able to give yourself the blessing that you seek from your antagonist.
Yeah.
So, for example,
yeah.
let's say that you just went through a really messy divorce, and you want
right.
you have this fantasy in your head that you want your ex-wife or your ex-husband to say, you know what, I screwed up. You were wonderful. It's all my fault.
Right.
You did, you know, it was like,
yeah, yeah.
I did this, this, and this. And you have this fantasy,
yeah.
and that's the climax of your story. And you know what?
Right.
It may never happen. However, what is it that you want to hear from somebody else? Like, so I have people write the climax. For the climax exercise, I have people give themselves a blessing, because you can't ask for a blessing from somebody unless
uh-uh.
you know that you deserve it.
Right.
So in some ways, if you can, actually, can I just read a quick paragraph from my book?
Cause yeah, go right ahead. You got the book there?
Yeah. Yeah. So where did this go? So I have there it is. Okay. Even if you can't predict the climax of your story, feeling ready to step up to the challenges presented by the narrative conflict is often half, if not the entire battle. After all, before you can conquer your antagonist, you need to conquer whatever vulnerabilities, including fears, doubts, resentments, or misgivings, are preventing you from progressing to the next chapter of your narrative. Some internal struggle typically precedes the resolution of any conflict. What if you felt so mentally, physically, and emotionally ready to face the challenges ahead that your sense of confidence and empowerment was success enough so that you wouldn't have to even win the battle? Metaphorically speaking, what if you could ask your antagonist for a blessing, knowing you deserve one, without it mattering whether or not you received it? This would be a beautiful climax indeed.
Yeah, that's great. You know what that reminds me of? And I've mentioned this show before, but I call it the universe's most irritating spiritual truth, which is whatever is annoying you about someone else is what you want to change in yourself, like every single time. Every day. It certainly has been true for me, and it drives me crazy because sometimes I think, no, this time it's this person is just being a dick, and that's why I'm annoyed. But it never works that way. Not ever.
Right.
Not ever.
Right. And this is all, by the way, we're talking about the inner story. Like, I make a distinction between the external story, which is like the things that happen to us.
You know,
we graduate from college and we go to work, and we're like, if you walked into your neighbor and you said, "What's up?" and they said, "I just wrote a book," and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Or like, the inner story is like what it brings up for you. You know, like getting on a radio show and I have to expose all these myself. And, you know,
right.
It's a whole nother level of story that actually, to me, like the more that you focus on working through your inner story, the more it enhances your outer story.
Oh,
it's
my
a path.
God. You bet.
Know?
You can't do
it's
one
a path.
Without the other.
No.
Yeah, in fact, when I talk to my memoir students, one of the things I've had to hit home with them is when they're writing about their past is, look, these things happened and you were a part of it. But the thing you have to remember, I'm saying to my students, is your response was unique to you. I know you think that everyone would have responded that way, but it's not true. You know, the parents got into a huge argument and you responded by chasing after your father. So you have to teach us why you thought that was the best thing to do. I think most of us look at may look at our past and think, well, I did the only thing one could do, but it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
You do the thing that you could do. And that's that emotional life of why you made the choices you did that were unique to you, you know,
Absolutely.
Not anyone.
Absolutely. And those choices make a difference.
Yeah.
Those choices influence our...
Well, this is such interesting stuff.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Say that again?
No, I just said thank you.
I'm sorry. I didn't quite hear you. Can you say that again?
I just said thank you. I just said thank you. That's
all
I said.
You're welcome. All right. Well, listen. Oh,
Hello?
My God. It sounded so much more elaborate than that. Well, all right. Listen,
okay.
Kim, this has been a very short 30 minutes, but I wanted to get one more question answered from you before I say goodbye. Answer me this. If writing, just writing in general, whether it's this book, your journalism, or maybe you write in your journal, I bet you do. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
Oh, wow. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? Wow, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Something I would really want to, like, I don't know that I can answer on my, on,
first
you know,
thing.
Without, yeah, first thing, it's taught me about myself. It's taught me what I think and feel, and that there's sometimes a difference between all the thoughts that are swimming around in my head and the things that actually end up, when I see it on paper, it just crystallizes them in a way that isn't possible when I write them in my head.
Yeah.
But I guess, I mean, I love writing because it's a form of self-expression. It's just, it's a way to explain things for people that have lots of different thoughts. For me, writing helps me organize my thoughts. So, I don't know, maybe it's a long way of saying it, but for me, writing really helps me organize my thoughts. I'm the type of person that I can tell the same story a million different ways. And when I sit down, it really just helps me focus. And focus my story and get clear on what it is that I want to say. makes me realize, like, oh, wait, there's, I can see things, like, if I can see contradictions more clearly. And I don't know, just for me, it's like the ultimate form of creativity, aside from dance. But I'm not writing a book about dance. But
yeah.
So does that make sense? I'm not sure. I want to think about that more.
So
but you're asking
you
me, putting me on the
yourself.
Spot. Yeah. It's like a.
It has taught you about yourself. You know, actually,
yeah.
I will say, Kim, that it's very typical
yeah.
for writers, people who like to think through writing, that they need to write down. They don't know what they know until they've written it.
Yeah.
In a strange way, they need to write it to know. You have to write what you know to know what you know.
It's you know what that
it's
is
very
really
typical.
True. That's kind of what I was
oh,
trying to
Kim,
say.
Oh, Kim. Well, listen. Thank you. Well, look at the book once again is Step Out of Your Story. Writing Exercises to Reframe and Transform Your Life, published by the wonderful New World Library. Kim, good luck. I hope you get to meet lots of people and transform their lives.